joining us now as we have a chance to talk about the big fight coming up here as the UFC main event 264, Dustin Poirier, taken on, I don't know why, just throwing like the French accent for no reason on there, and Conor McGregor in a big fight here. It's match number 3. It's the one that will break the tiebreaker right there. So it's going to be exciting and looking forward to it and talking everything UFC with us when we bring him on each and every week to talk a little UFC, even though it's been more than a week, is Greg LaFountain. Greg, what's happening, brother?
Hey, how are you?
Doing okay today. We beat the storm. The storm was looking nasty out there. Have you had to drive through it?
No, I haven't. I was working remotely today, so I'm just watching it come down at my house right now.
I was going to say, I was over at the Blue Angels, and we were covering the event and coming through the other side, going over the bridge. It was like that Independence Day cloud rolling through. So I'm glad they got the Blues in. I know tomorrow they're going to do it as well, and that's always a big event for the area. But when it comes to UFC fighting, before we get into the fight, Greg, if you had to pick, you know, Blues is sort of like the Mecca. When you move here to Pensacola, you get the grits of yaya at a place like Fish House. You can go to Five Flag Speedway for the Snowball Derby. There's a few things like you want to do. When it comes down to Blue Angels, though, it is the big event. People travel from all over. They have more than one show, but this is their show because they're from Pensacola. What would be that venue for UFC? Because I had a chance to live in Vegas at so many great places, and I know in L.A. you can go to the Staples Center, but what is like the Mecca to you in your mind of a venue for a UFC or any type of fight?
Great question. Right now, presently speaking, it would be the T-Mobile Arena. That's an arena built specifically for the UFC. It opened up a couple of years ago, so that's where they bring a lot of the big events. But historically, and then you want to say like Madison Square Garden, but it was just up until about 2 or 3 years ago where MMA was legal in New York, and there have been some really big fights in the last 2 or 3 years, but the UFC has been around for, 30 years now, or 20 years now. So, MGM Grand is the first thing that comes to mind. When you think of all the really big fights, you think of the MGM Grand in Vegas. If you want to talk internationally, the O2 Arena over in England has had some really big fights with international fighters. Michael Bisping, Anderson Silva fought there. And then you look down to Rio. There's been some huge events down in Brazil. The UFC is really trying to get big over in Asia as well. New Zealand and Australia, there have been some events there. But if I had to pick one, MGM Grand is probably one of the biggest fights that have taken place. It was actually where I saw my first UFC event, UFC 160, where Cain Velasquez fought Bigfoot Silva for the heavyweight title. And, Mike Tyson was sitting there ringside. It was just really a great atmosphere. You had Brazilian fans and Mexican fans there, and going after each other in the stands. It was a really fun event to be at.
Over Fight Island, over all those over Fight Island. No, I'm just joking. How many?
The one that's been around for a year, with no fans. Yeah, I think I'll choose those.
The history. When it comes down to it, though, this is going to be a huge fight. The records are similar. You know, Conor McGregor, you look at him, he's 22-5, but at one point his prime, he was really tough to beat. Where do you look at, because there are guys' names that resonate with fighting, but they're not the best of all time when you talk to the elites of the elites, the people like yourselves that study the sports for a living. 22-5, there are guys right now that are undefeated. There are guys like what we see from a guy like Khabib or folks like that. They don't lose. Where would you put McGregor? Because he's obviously a polarizing figure, but 22-5 is, to me, doesn't put you as one of the top three or four of all time.
No, and I don't think that he is. I think that when you look at, like you said, he's polarizing. He really brought a lot of eyes to the sport, whether people tune in just to watch him fight, whether he has that Mayweather effect where people want to tune in just to watch him lose. He does that. He draws. I mean, you look at just the press conferences that he brings in, you can't get in. That's unheard of for any other event where you can't even get in to hear somebody talk, let alone fight. So it's just what he does is he's definitely one of the more polarizing and without a doubt the most popular fighter of all time. But if you're talking pound for pound, he's not in the top 10. And that's not anything to disgrace Conor McGregor and what he did. What he did was come in and knock out Jose Aldo, who hadn't lost in 10 years and 13 seconds, and then to move up to 155 from 145 and get the 155-pound strap and hold the belt simultaneously, which had never been done in UFC history. And then once he did it, other fighters like Daniel Cormier and Amanda Nunes wanted to do that as well, and they went on and they did do it. So when you just hear George St. Pierre is another one who got a belt as well, went up to 185, you heard other fighters just Before then, it was how many times can you defend your belt in a row? Conor changed it that how many different weight classes can you hold a belt? And that was something I've never been done before. But if you're asking, like, where's he all-time ranking? Is he on Mount Rushmore? I can't put him there just because of the reasons that I just stated.
Greg, you look at this fight, not only, you know, the main event, but a lot of the undercard, when you look at it, you've got guys like Burns, who's been in some of the big fights, guys like Hardy, and then you look at even a guy like Sean O'Malley, who's working his way up, and, you know, any fighter that is fighting straight up and is minus 800, that's insanity. You pretty much, you know, like, if you're the other fighter, you don't even want to get in the ring, but he's got the funky hair going on.
Yeah. A little side note with that, his original opponent pulled out 10 days ago. So Chris, his opponent now, Chris Marcino, he has never even fought in the UFC. He took this fight on 10 days notice, which gives him a 3-fight contract with the UFC. So there's Sean O'Malley had a much better opponent beforehand. So it's just, that's the way the cards fold sometimes.
And their hair looks like one of those spirit pop-up stores. I mean, one guy's got it neon green and the other has got like the rainbow colors of Skittles. Who am I to judge? I tried to cut my hair yesterday and this thing is atrocious.
It's Sean O'Malley and then Sean O'Malley on Wayfair, you know?
But it should be fun. But overall, when you look at this card, though, where do you put this compared to some of the others? It's really tough until you see the fights because it could be the best of all time if every one of them ends up having, like, great TKOs and great excitement. But, you know, the fans are back, the excitement, which for a sport like UFC is detrimental. I mean, it's detrimental not to have the fans. Like, it is something where, out of all sports, like college football, you think about the passion even more than the NFL. Because most people are checking their fantasy football rosters at the bar. You don't have to go to an NFL game. But for college football, the camaraderie, the tailgates, everything, I put UFC as far up there where you get the celebrities in the front row, things like that. But the excitement of it, where do you put this card before the fight, though?
Yeah, I really love this card. For hardcores like myself, it's something that if you're a generic fan that maybe just watches Conor McGregor, you look at the rest of these fighters and you're like, I don't know who these guys are, but you look at, you know, like you said, co-main event, Gilbert Burns, his last fight was for the 175-pound belt, which he lost to Usman. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, his opponent, fought twice for the belt against Tyron Woodley. So you look at, these are like contenders who have been top five guys at welterweight, and then there's a household name. And, you know, if you watch football, Greg Hardy is fighting on this card. He's a, you know, big heavyweight with knockout power who's going against Tai Tuivasa, who is another heavyweight with knockout power. And if you haven't seen this guy before, he's a guy that likes to do shoeys, which, if you're not familiar with the term, you take your shoe, you pour a beer in your shoe, you hawk a loogie in the shoe, and then you give it to Tua, and then he chugs the beer out of the shoe. It's disgusting, but it's something that a lot of people really enjoy. He's a fan favorite.
We enjoy, in life, making a mockery and laughter at someone else's expense. I mean, it's like America's Funniest Home Videos. I'll never forget, like, Bob Saget and everybody laughing as, like, a grandfather fell off of a – he tried to get on his kids – this guy was, like, 90, and he tried to get on his skateboard and go down a hill, and he tumbled down, like, fully – and everybody's like, ah, ha, ha, ha. They put the laugh track. I'm like, that grandfather probably is paralyzed. I said, he is not moving. Yeah. But everybody's just, like, laughing, and then they go to a funny cat video, and everybody's okay. Yeah. But that's America for you, so –
yeah, absolutely. And it's just, I think that when you look at this card, it doesn't have the shine that maybe some other cards have, because it doesn't even have a title fight. Whereas you look at other cards just, you know, within the last couple of months, they had 3 title fights. But you have Conor McGregor, and when you have Conor McGregor, and then you have these top 10 matchups, which are really fun. Like I said, Wonderboy Thompson and Gilbert Burns, you got jiu-jitsu versus kickboxer. Kind of old school UFC mentality. Who's going to win? That was the whole point of the UFC to begin. Who's going to win? Is it going to be a sumo guy or is it going to be a jiu-jitsu guy? We saw how that turned out. So this is kind of a cool, a lot of fun matchups on this card with, like, a lot of jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing. Can't wait for this card. I don't think it stacks up, like you said, when you look at 3 title fights, because you have 3 belts that could change hands, but I'm really excited for it.
Look, McGregor, not just because of the cool commercials he does with Irish whiskey and other things, but the things that he does in life. I mean, even his story where, you know, what he made from nothing, rags to riches, has been with the, you know, his girl by his side that is helped support him, and now his wife, and just the things like that maybe people don't see outside of the energy, the, you know, the chair throwing, that kind of stuff. When it comes down to it, though, Poirier's a guy that is American, 27-6. He beat McGregor. I watched that fight last time, and he just flat out beat him. He was better. When it comes down to this, is it almost – okay, Greg, you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, America's team, right? You said that, America's team. I'll give you that for now. But at this point, is it un-American for people to, like, go to the sports bars and want McGregor to beat Poirier based on you got Ireland over the United States?
That's a great question. That's something Chael Sonnen brought up years ago, was he couldn't understand why Brazilian fans got so behind Anderson Silva or Wanderlei Silva, and Irish fans got behind Conor McGregor. But then you have American fans rooting for Anderson Silva instead of the American bred fighter. I don't know if it's un-American. I think that fight fans are fight fans. I think that it's different in America because we just tend to – I mean, how many Kansas City Chiefs fans are there out there now? How many were there 10 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, think that we have a lot of fans.
I think Luka's a prime example.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And where they've been with him from the start, it's like when you ask Patriot fans, I'm not taking a shot at you, who was the quarterback before Tom Brady? They might know Drew Bledsoe, but who was it before that? You know, I think a lot of people are bandwagon fans in America, so they tend to just go with the hot hand.
I think that's fair. Yeah, and I think we're such an international game because there are fans of Dirk Nowitzki. Look, Giannis is a fan. If you ask most people who's the Bucks' favorite player, it's Giannis. He's from Greece. You know, a lot of these guys. But I think it is different. Now, I do think, though, if Poirier was fighting against McGregor in the Olympics or something, I think we'd be rooting for Poirier. I would hope.
Yes.
I mean, that's – if you're rooting – if you're that guy, like, rooting for – like Sergio Rodriguez and Pau Gasol to beat us in Spain in the like FIBA games, like get out of here. I'm not in the mood for that. So, but overall, when it comes down to it, is this something where you look at we know that there's always been those big names, but it feels like there's been a little bit of a drop off. And what I mean by that is you had Khabib that sort of called it quits. McGregor's retired like Brett Favre these days, but he'll be back. We know that. But at the same time, is there that fighter that we all need to get behind? Because it seemed forever with Bones Jones and so many of these guys, there was just an influx, Cormier and so many big fighters like Anderson Silva coming at one time. And now, right, I don't feel like we have as many, but am I wrong? Because I'm not the expert here.
I don't think that's wrong of you to say. I think that there's a lot of moving parts right now. John Jones not fighting is a shame. It's just, him not being there because he is so dominant and he is probably the GOAT in our sport. It's just him not fighting, I think, really hurts the UFC and its market, being able to market him, because he's in this transition of going up from light heavyweight to heavyweight and fighting arguably the scariest man to ever step in foot in the octagon, of Francis Ngannou, who could just knock you out in 18 seconds like he has the, you know, top five ranked heavyweight.
Yeah, that guy is scary.
He's very scared, and everybody wants to see that fight, but for whatever reason, the UFC can't get, I don't know if it's contracts, if it's money, if it's, I'm not sure what it is, but there's so much, if Dana's trying to play this, you know, promoter card of does John Jones really want to fight? I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, it's just, it's tough because there are certain fighters like John Jones who aren't fighting right now, who are just kind of in the shadows waiting. You've got Khabib, who is officially retired, but Dana keeps on calling him every other month to say, hey, are you sure you're still retired? Or do you want to come back? But I think that we've got some young stars who, you know, I mean, even look at Usman. Usman should be a household name right now, the way he knocked out Jorge Masvidal. I mean, he's just a fun fighter to watch. And then you've got stars like Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz who haven't even, you know, tasted UFC gold, but are fan favorites. So I think that they're there, but it hurts when the fan favorites don't have that strap around their waist.